Welcome to Today's Local Environment, the Compliance Podcast, brought to you by LGEN, the Local Government Environmental Assistance Network. LGEN is a first-stop shop providing local governments with user-friendly information on compliance with federal environmental regulations, funding strategies, and tools for advancing healthy and sustainable communities for all. Brought to you by the Environmental Law Institute under a cooperative agreement with the United States Environmental Protection Agency. ELI makes law work for people, places, and the planet.
Welcome to Taking on Trash, a National Recycling Strategy, an episode of Today's Local Environment, the Compliance Podcast, produced by the Local Government Environmental Assistance Network, LGEN, under a cooperative agreement between the Environmental Law Institute and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. My name is Jim McElfish, and I'm a senior attorney here at ELI. We generate a lot of trash here in the U.S. In 2018, we produced approximately 292 million tons of municipal solid waste, of which approximately 69 million tons were mechanically recycled and 25 million tons composted. Clearly, we have far to go. In fact, the national recycling goal is to increase the recycling rate to 50% by 2030. Well, that's a tall order. Like so many sectors, the recycling system is experiencing a lot of disruption, changes in global trade, greater awareness about a need for accountability. To tackle these problems, the EPA released its National Recycling Strategy just last November. Here with me today to talk about these developments is a man who can probably talk trash and ways to tackle it better than anyone. David Biederman, Executive Director and CEO, Solid Waste Association of North America, or SWANA. Thanks for joining us, David.
Thanks, Jim. It's a pleasure to be here.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit about SWANA and what you do and what your mission is?
Sure. SWANA, as you mentioned, is the Solid Waste Association of North America. We're the largest solid waste and recycling association in both the United States and Canada, with more than 10,000 members in 47 chapters over the entirety of both countries. Our mission is to move from solid waste management to resource management. We want to extract as much value out of waste materials as possible, recycle as much as we can, compost as much as we can, convert as much to energy as we can, and then safely manage the remaining material in appropriately engineered and regulated disposal facilities. In order to do that, we provide education to our members through a variety of conferences and ensure that safety is a core value for all solid waste operations.
That's an amazingly broad mission, and I hope we can get into some of the aspect of your activities as we have this conversation today. It seems to me that a lot of those areas of interest overlap with the EPA's National Recycling Strategy, and I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the strategy and SWANA's relationship to it.
Sure. So the National Recycling Strategy is the result of EPA's convening leading associations like SWANA and others during the 2017 to 2019 time period when the United States was trying to figure out how to respond to China's National SWORD program, which restricted imported waste materials, including recyclables, from going into China. And so we had local governments suspending curbside collection programs. There was a lot of newspaper articles about recycling not being worth it anymore. And this led EPA to create the America Recycles Network and have associations like SWANA sign a pledge to do whatever we could to support recycling. The Trump administration actually issued a draft strategy in the fall of 2020. That the Biden administration finalized about a year later. And SWANA has played a critical role in educating EPA and other stakeholders about what is important to be fixed in recycling, and then pushed strongly for the Biden administration to issue the National Recycling Strategy on America Recycles Day in November of 2021.
So is America's Recycles Day an annual day, or is it a one-time event?
So America Recycles Day is an annual event that Keep America Beautiful actually started years ago. And over the last 4 or 5 years, it has become an opportunity, along with Earth Day, for people interested in sustainability and recycling to gather together to talk about success stories, to identify opportunities to expand recycling programs and make them better. And these events are now taking place both at the national level here in Washington. There has been a America Recycles Day fair or trade show that took place in both 2018 and 2019 before COVID, where hundreds of people got together to look at the latest recycling technologies, hear about successful programs, and also at the state and local level.
So let's talk a little bit about the National Recycling Strategy. What's in it that we should know about?
So the National Recycling Strategy has five key themes. First of all, the idea that we should improve the markets for recycled commodities, which is something that MRFs in particular, I think, would be of interest in.
Do you want to say what MRFs are?
As I said, MRF, I realized I should probably need to explain that a MRF is a material recovery facility, which is a fancy phrase for a recycling facility. It's a location where commingled materials, plastic, glass, paper, metal, arrive to and are separated, usually mechanically, into commodities that can be sold to end markets. So the blue bin and the blue bin of all your neighbors gets brought to the MRF in a single truck, and then through a series of conveyor belts, optical sorters, magnets, and other devices, they get separated into commodity-grade paper, plastic, metals, plural, ferrous and non-ferrous, as well as glass.
Let's come back to the National Recycling Strategy then. So you said there were five elements, the first being markets, and we now know that MRFs have a great reason to be interested in markets because that's where the materials go that they're able to recover. So what else can you tell us about the strategy?
The other elements of the strategy are, second, to increase collection and improve the materials management infrastructure. So curbside recycling is only available to a certain percentage of Americans, and we want to increase accessibility to it. But we also want to improve what's going on at MRFs and optimize their ability to process more material and do a better job of processing it. So that's the second element. The third element is reducing contamination. Americans, unfortunately, do not do a great job of putting the right stuff in their recycling bin. And as a result, about 20% of the material that comes into the front of a recycling facility or a MRF is not recyclable. The fourth of the elements is enhancing policy and programs to supplement recycling and circularity. That means using the policy lever to divert more material away from landfill and waste to energy. And the fifth and final element of the recycling strategy that EPA issued in late 2021 is to standardize data collection. We have a great diversity of how we track recycling in the United States. It's done mostly at the state and the local level. And we need to standardize those measurements and, in fact, increase our collection of data so we know how much material is being collected, where there are holes, and how we can process material better.
Now, David, our audience is mostly local governments and operators that work with local governments. And I wonder if we can focus on particular areas of the recycling strategy that local governments should pay attention to. Are there some you'd like to single out?
Well, absolutely. Reducing contamination is one that local governments in particular need to be focused on. They need to be communicating with residents about how to recycle right, whether it's through social media, whether it's through traditional mailing, whether it's through events. But if we can reduce contamination at MRFs, and instead of using 20% of the capacity of those expensive facilities to simply process garbage, and instead expand our collection and process recyclable materials, those systems will be much more cost effective and will recycle more material. So that would be the first of two that I would highlight.
What happens to the materials that are contaminated, or if there's a contaminated load or load? Our listeners may wonder, so what happens when the wrong plastics get mixed in with material, or if there's organic material? Where does it go?
So unfortunately, there's a lot of dirty diapers and other non-recyclable material that's placed in those bins that end up at the MRF. And that material is typically picked out by people or by robots. And that material is garbage, and it ends up in a landfill, or it ends up at a waste-to-energy facility.
And that's an additional step, because it has to go from the MRF to somewhere that's capable of disposing of that material, I assume.
That's correct. In addition to the processing cost of $70 to $90 a ton that it costs to process recyclables, that material is then trucked to a disposal facility and then disposed of at that location. So there's additional greenhouse gas emissions as a result of that transportation that could be completely avoided if that material is managed properly.
And additional costs all along the chain then, I assume, as well.
That's exactly right.
So you were about to indicate a second area that our listeners might be particularly interested in. What was that?
Thanks, Jim. The other area is improving the market for recycled commodities. I mean, there are robust markets for cardboard and for certain types of plastic, the ones and the twos, as they're known. And metal is a pretty strong market as well. But if we can improve markets for other lightweight plastic material, including the plastic bags that are the worst enemy of every MRF operator, because they get in and clog up the machinery and force the MRFs to shut down several times a day. If we can improve markets, if MRFs can play a role in improving markets for the recycled commodities that they're processing, it will be both good for the environment as well as good for the bottom line. And that's the kind of double victory that we're looking to create through recycling programs.
So are there things in the national strategy that speak to each of these concerns or issues? Are there good practices or recommendations? What does the strategy have to say?
So the strategy includes dozens of tactical activities that local governments, the private sector, waste generators, and others should take to improve the recycling system in the United States. So, for example, funding is a constant concern, and increasing awareness and about availability of public and private funding and strategies to access that funding is an example of a tactic that is listed in the National Recycling Strategy. And that, if successfully implemented, will allow MRFs, both in the public and private sector, to access money that will assist them in buying new equipment, recycling education, hiring more people, and therefore helping to support a more productive and effective recycling system.
So finding new sources of money and ways to direct that effectively is a pretty important feature. Are there other things in the strategy that can be implemented directly, or is it all dependent on new dollars?
So I actually don't think it's all dependent on dollars. I think it's certainly possible to do education and outreach to the public on the value of recycling and how to recycle properly at minimal cost. We already communicate to members of the public on a regular basis. Local Department of Public Works do that all the time. My local city does that with me, both digitally as well as the old-fashioned snail mail way. helping to do that, and with a mind towards making sure people know what should be in the recycling bin, but also what shouldn't be in the recycling bin. And I'll give you a quick example. Today is actually Recycling Collection Day in the city of Alexandria, Virginia. And I, when I was walking my dog this morning, I took a peek in some of those blue bins. And every single blue bin had a lot of non-recyclable material in it. And the city of Alexandria, you know, is relatively educated, relatively affluent homeowners, at least in my neighborhood. And so if we are having trouble reaching those folks, I can only imagine what people who are less interested in recycling are doing. And so we really need to do a better job of reaching out to the general public and telling them, for example, that plastic bags are not recyclable in curbside systems, even though there's a recycling symbol on that bag that says it's recyclable. That doesn't mean it's recyclable in your local curbside collection system. That's just one example of what local governments can be doing without getting more money from state or federal governmental sources to improve the quality of their recycling system.
So the EPA national strategy that was issued last year, there clearly seems to be an important area for your association and members. Is this a new move by the federal government to get into this end of solid waste, or have they been at it for some time?
So that's a very good question, Jim, because the federal government has supported recycling, but it hasn't had any sort of national strategy or national plan around recycling. About 9 years ago, the EPA and the U.S. Department of Agriculture came together to develop a food waste reduction strategy, which is a narrow section of the waste stream. But that was the first time the federal government actually began to develop a strategy that touched on recycling. This is really, really important and different from what's happened in the past, because under federal law, under the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, states and local governments are delegated authority over solid waste management. And so the federal government has basically taken a back seat on recycling.
So the fact that this has been rolled out offers some opportunities, I take it, for local governments and MRFs and the citizenry to address recycling in some more meaningful ways. Is that right? Is that fair?
I think that's accurate, because what's going to happen is EPA is going to be able to facilitate national conversations around recycling. So City X will be able to learn from the success that City Y has had, perhaps in reducing contamination, or perhaps in buying a new baler. They'll also learn from each other's mistakes. EPA has a unique bully pulpit that it can use to promote recycling that other organizations, including SWANA, sadly, simply don't have. And combining EPA's discussions about the national recycling goal to divert 50% of the waste by 2030 with the national recycling strategy, with the additional funding that Congress has recently appropriated for elements of recycling, I think creates some real opportunities over the next few years to move the needle on recycling throughout the United States.
So what should local governments be looking toward as next steps? I assume you issue a strategy, you make people aware of it, you do podcasts. Are there next steps that EPA or SWANA or other groups are contemplating?
So EPA, when it issued the national strategy, when EPA issued the national recycling strategy, it asked for volunteers for organizations to take the lead on some of the individual tactics that are mentioned in the strategy. So there's, you know, dozens of tactics in there, 40 or 45 of them by memory. And SWANA has submitted a proposal to be involved in 6 or 7 of them and actually take the lead on several of them, including improving the recycling infrastructure. We think that improving our national recycling infrastructure, having more MRFs, having better MRFs, having MRFs that have modern equipment in them, robotics using AI, for example, is a key place where SWANA can provide some expertise because we have national bandwidth as well. We have national expertise in that area. But if the folks listening to this podcast want to get involved, they can play a role either individually or as representatives of their local governments through this process that EPA has opened up. And if you go to EPA's website, there's a form that you can submit. And I know from my conversations with EPA leadership, they would be eager to accept many participants from local governments.
That's great to hear. I love to see a strategy that has a method and sequence of steps. And I also like the idea that people and local governments and MRFs can get directly involved in pieces that they're particularly interested in. We're going to take a break, but we'll be back in just a moment.
Thank you for listening to the show. Before we return to today's local environment, the Compliance Podcast, a reminder that you can find a variety of user-friendly tips, funding resources, and other tools for ensuring your community complies with federal environmental regulations by visiting lgene.net. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back. I'm speaking with David Biederman, Executive Director and CEO of SWANA, the Solid Waste Association of North America. And we've been talking about EPA's new national recycling strategy and what it means for materials recovery, and particularly materials recovery facilities, or MRFs, a term that I learned today and I hope we'll all learn to use as we talk about what happens to the solid waste and recyclables that leave our homes and businesses. Now, a big question for listeners of this podcast is, well, we've been talking about money and upgrading facilities and marketplace, but is there money? Or is there money associated with the strategy? Or where can we look to implement these great ideas?
So the National Recycling Strategy itself doesn't come with funding that's available to local governments. However, there was last, probably the one of the very few things that both Democrats and Republicans agreed on last year was to pass the infrastructure bill, which President Biden coincidentally signed into law on America Recycles Day on November 15th.
How wonderful.
Last year, November 15th felt a little bit like Christmas because I, you know, watched President Biden sign the bill and had earlier that day participated in America Recycles Day event at which an EPA official discussed the implementation of the National Recycling Strategy. So in my mind, those two are really quite closely connected. And the infrastructure bill contains two funding sources that local governments will be able to access. First of all, the bill contains about $15 million a year for 5 years for education and outreach for local governments to use under what was used to be the Recycle Act. So SWANA and others were able to persuade Congress to take a separate piece of legislation, the Recycle Act, and incorporate it into the infrastructure bill. And we are eagerly awaiting EPA's issuance of an application form and a schedule for getting that money. Just earlier today, in fact, I emailed some people at EPA seeking an update on that, because I am concerned, frankly, that that money is not going to become available until calendar year 2023, more than a year after the bill was signed. And that's too long to be waiting.
So is that money to be given out by grants, and is it going to be done nationally or will it be done regionally? Do we have some insight into that?
It's a national program. It's 100% grant money, and local governments and their partners in the private sector, when they have a partner, are eligible recipients, as are tribes. I shouldn't leave the tribes out.
Yes.
But we are waiting for EPA to issue some guidance on exactly how the process is going to work, whether you apply to EPA directly, whether it goes through states, things like that.
So that's a $15 million a year funding stream, which clearly is going to be important to our listeners and your members. So let's hope the guidance is out in the very near future, maybe right after Earth Day. What about the other funding stream that you referred to?
The other funding stream in the infrastructure bill was actually the appropriation for money for solid waste infrastructure that had been part of the Save Our Seas 2.0 Act that actually passed the previous year in December of 2020. So Save Our Seas is one of the few areas that both Democrats and Republicans agree on, that there's too much ocean litter, there's too much plastic in the ocean, and we need to do more to keep plastic out of our waterways. And so they passed the bill in December of 2020, but that was after the appropriations for federal environmental activities had already gone through. And so while they authorized the activity, they didn't actually fund it. And it wasn't until the infrastructure bill was signed into law in November of 2021 that they funded the Save Our Seas Act. And the Save Our Seas provision that I'm referring to that can be helpful for local governments is $275 million over 5 years. So a much larger amount of money than is the Recycle Act money that's in that same infrastructure bill. And EPA has started to take steps to create a application process known as SWIFR, SWIFR, the Solid Waste Infrastructure for Recycling program. And we again are asking and urging EPA to roll that out quickly because it's a substantial amount of money. And there's some irony that you and I are having this conversation just days before the United Nations Environmental Assembly meets in Nairobi, Kenya, to start the negotiation over an international marine litter plastics in ocean treaty. Botswana has spoken to the State Department, the Commerce Department, and others about what action needs to be taken there. We think that there's a significant role for recycling and investing in plastic recycling in developing countries. But at the same time, we also need to get our domestic house in order as well. And this funding is critical for doing that.
So this SWIFR funding is all available within the U.S., not for our international efforts. Is that right?
Yes, I appreciate that statement. It is money specifically authorized and appropriated for domestic use. There's other funding to other agencies, like the Agency for International Development, that is going to be used to enhance international marine litter activity and international plastic activity. But the money that I was referring to, the $275 million, is solely for domestic use.
So, do we have some sense that money, any of it, will go directly to MRFs or cities or counties, or is it likely to go through federal agencies or state agencies for their own operations and activities?
My understanding is that there's going to be a national competitive grant application process, that it is going to be done start relatively soon, but I don't know the details on that. And we really do need EPA to be more transparent in this grant program. And so, EPA, if you're listening, please, sooner rather than later, local governments and others need guidance from you on when these grants are going to be available, who is going to be eligible, and what needs to be done to be successful in receiving a grant. Because, particularly with regards to the smaller grant program, the $15 million a year is obviously not sufficient to educate 320 million Americans on how to recycle right. I expect them to get dozens, if not hundreds, of applications. And so it's going to be a challenge for EPA to figure out who deserves the money. So please, EPA, if you're listening, move quickly.
Well, I'm sure EPA is listening since they're a cooperative sponsor of today's podcast. So, David, I think you've come to the right place. I do think EPA is probably in an enviable position of having to develop regulations and guidance and programs for a lot of money, not only for the infrastructure bill, but they, together with the Treasury Department, with the American Recovery Money, which has come across many of their programs. So we're in a rare, perhaps, position to make a lot of progress on some of these environmental areas. But speed, I take your message. Speed is really important. So are there things that our listeners should keep in mind as they look at each of these funding streams, or as they decide to get involved with the National Recycling Strategy rollout? Are there tips for an elected official or someone on the Department of Public Works or someone who's looking for a write a new contract with a MRF? What tips do we have before we close things out?
So I think the number one tip is to be connected to what's going on in Washington. What would make me unhappy as an elected official would be to find out, at the end of this year that there was this program that I missed out on because I wasn't part of the national conversation on recycling. And SWANA is one of the places where the national conversation on recycling is taking place. We regularly communicate to our members about what's happening in Washington, about the National Recycling Strategy, about the funding that EPA is in the process of developing an application for, about the hearing that took place earlier in February at the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee on two additional pieces of legislation on recycling, because all of these things are important for local government officials to know about as they decide how to allocate resources on recycling. I'd love for every recycling coordinator in the United States to be a SWANA member. That's probably not a reasonable expectation. But at the same time, we provide a lot of useful information on recycling and more broadly on waste reduction, on composting, on sustainability, and on doing all of it safely, which, Jim, as you know, is a particular passion of mine. And we have an event in late March where the person responsible for implementing the National Recycling Strategy is actually speaking. And I expect that we will learn more at that event about all of what we've discussed earlier here.
So, how can our listeners learn more about that event? And if they're not able to attend, learning what happened at that event, how do we learn about these things and more about SWANA?
So the best way to learn more about the SWANA organization is to go to swana.org and learn about our programs and activities. We have chapters in virtually every state and every province in Canada. Members of SWANA can attend our events at a discounted rate. And we have an event coming up on March 21st through the 24th in Kansas City, Missouri, known as SOAR. It's our national technical conference. And Nina Shaw, who is charged with implementing the National Recycling Strategy, will be one of our keynote speakers. So I would welcome, of course, folks participating in that event. And if they can't make it to Kansas City, hearing about that event and what took place through our post-event communications. The other environmental issue that folks might be interested in is PFAS. That's the chemical compound that's found in a lot of consumer goods that ends up in landfills, and then landfills are responsible for managing that. We have a whole track on PFAS at our technical conference in Kansas City. And so I'm hopeful that we'll be having a robust conversation among government officials, private sector organization, solution providers in both in the technology space in particular, about how to solve these very, very challenging problems.
David, I really appreciate your guiding us through a very complex area, and we've only touched on part of the recycling universe and markets. But I feel like I've learned a lot more that I can actually even take home and figure out which bin to use and what not to use. And I feel like we've had a great opportunity to learn a little bit about SWANA's fine work. So thank you again, David, for joining us.
Thank you, Jim. I really appreciate the opportunity. And if people could just communicate to their citizens not to put plastic bags in a blue bin, not to put Batteries in a blue bin, it will help the recycling system immensely because that will reduce the frequency of fires. It'll make the facility safer, and it means that the plastic bags won't get stuck in the various pieces of equipment.
Well, thanks for that final word of advice, David, and thanks to all of you, our listeners, as always. Until next time, this is Jim McElfish and the Environmental Law Institute closing out another episode of today's Local Environment, the Compliance Podcast.
Thank you for listening to today's Local Environment, the Compliance Podcast, a podcast brought to you by LGEEN, the Local Government Environmental Assistance Network. Visit us at lgeen.net and on social media for user-friendly tips, funding resources, and other tools ensuring your community complies with federal environmental regulations. And please, take our latest survey while you're there. Together, we can advance healthy and sustainable communities for all.